As the lockout of NFL officials continues, the replacement refs have come under heated criticism from coaches, players, and fans. But all that went thermonuclear last night when the Seattle Seahawks hosted a desperation Hail Mary pass against the Green Bay Packers.
The game's final play is a Wilson loft to the end zone, which is fought for by Tate with Jennings simultaneous. Who has it? Who do they give it to? Touchdown! One guy goes up, touchdown. The other said no time. Has to be looked at because it's a score. Still have an official down there in the pile looking.
Officials looked for the ball, broke up the pile, huddled together, sent the play up to the replay booth, and after an interminable delay, announced the call.
This is deciding who wins the game on this
call.
After
further review, the call on the field stands. Touchdown. Game over.
Seahawks win in the most bizarre finish you'll ever see.
Announcer Mike Tirico making the call on ESPN's Monday Night Football. To be fair, bad calls by regular refs and umpires have decided not just football games, but the World Series, even a gold medal in basketball. What's the call by an ump or a ref that still drives you crazy? 800-989-8255 is our phone number. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. NPR sports correspondent Mike Pesca joins us from our bureau in New York. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
And, well, the NFL has issued a statement today that stands by that call, and despite what all of us can see, that it looked like an interception, but said actually the game should have been decided by a pass interference call that wasn't made.
It was a weird statement. No one expected the NFL to ever overturn its decision or even admit fault on the question that everyone was debating. Actually, what do you call a debate where it's 100% in agreement that people think that it was an interception? It's that sort of debate. But oddly, in this this statement concludes, before they list all the applicable rules, with this sentence: the result of the game is final. But in the middle of the statement, they do say that there was a pass interference, and they don't say it should have been called, but it does say this: the pass interference should have been a penalty for offensive pass interference, which would have ended the game. Put those two together, it seems like they're admitting mistake, but they're not admitting mistake. They go through the machinations of what happened. The defender grabbed the ball. It looked like the wide receiver got his hands in there, didn't really wrestle it away from the defender. It's why every commentator watching the game said it should have been an interception. They did not weigh in. They just basically said the referees made a judgment call. Then they looked at the review, and we're not going to second guess what the referees saw in that review. And when I say referees, you heard a reference there to one guy has his hands up, the other guy doesn't. The referees on the field weren't even in agreement. It was all too typical sorry state of affairs with these replacement referees.
And it's not just blown calls. Now, that one was particularly egregious.
Yeah.
But it's seemingly lack of control of the game. Things are happening. It's stretching out over time as they huddled for conferences time and again. And the players are trying to get away with things they wouldn't ordinarily even try.
Yeah. So George Will did once or frequently derides football as short bursts of action interspersed with committee meetings. And what he means are the huddles. But now the referees have all these committee meetings, and they don't know exactly where to put the ball or exactly what call to make. And there's a weird dynamic in these games because there's an off-field official. And when regular referees, the locked-out guys, when they're there, this off-field official is consulted with rarely and almost never intervenes. But now it seems that this off-field official, who most of the time was a regular official who worked NFL games but might be a little old or not physically capable of running up and down the field, now this guy is being called into every decision. It's dragging the games longer and longer. It's making things like instant replay reviews, which happen. There was a replay review in the Saints versus Chiefs game, and the Chiefs ball carrier, Drones, was down on the carpet. All parts of him were touching the carpet, and then the ball popped out. Everyone who knows football knows that that's not a fumble. It took them 5 minutes to figure out this wasn't a fumble. It's making what should be exciting games much less fun. But, and here's the really important thing in terms of the negotiation, doesn't seem to be affecting ratings yet.
And that brings us to the negotiating. What's at issue here?
It's mostly pensions. There is, with any negotiation, money at stake. And To put it quite simply, the NFL referees have pensions that was negotiated for in the 2006 collective bargaining agreement. The NFL wants to move them to 401k plans. This is happening all over America. It's not an issue unique to referees. Only teachers union and machinists and so forth don't play these big games on Monday Night Football where everyone has a stake in them getting a contract. And another interesting aspect of this is that most of the NFL teams, the slight majority, don't even give pensions to their own employees. So there's a little more at stake symbolically in showing that the owners have a backbone. There's a little more at stake than just saying these games, these Monday night and Sunday night football games are becoming a much less palatable product. Therefore, we'll fork over the relatively small amount of money that's in dispute this year. To get the deal done for this year would take about $3 million. In total, it's about $30 million over 7 years is the distance apart the two sides are.
And the commissioner, Roger Goodell, is catching a lot of heat, but effectively, he works for the owners.
He does. He has 31 and a half constituents in a way, since the Green Bay Packers don't have an actual owner. And the only news that I was looking for today, I knew that after the game, all the announcers on ESPN, maybe a little surprisingly, because they are business partners with the NFL, but they were ripping apart the NFL. And I particularly enjoyed Steve Young engaged in, you know, he vacillated between eloquence and being lost for words. And he and Trent Dilfer, two Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, talked about, "You're ruining the game we love." It seemed like a way of life was on the line. And I understand their ire. But, you know, ESPN, all the broadcasters, I think everyone had gone on board and said, something's got to change. Doesn't matter what they say. Doesn't matter what every caller to sports talk radio says, right? Matters what the 31 guys who own the team say.
And there's another problem. They put out a memo last week to coaches and players saying, would you stop berating the referees, please?
Yes,
don't do this in public.
And be kind to your replacement ref week. Yes.
Yes. And then there was one incident. One coach caught a $30,000 fine. And there were other incidents. Bill Belichick of the Patriots grabbed a referee to try to get his attention to protest a play at the end of his game that he lost. There was an incident in the Washington Redskins game where one of the assistant coaches berated an official so badly that the team was handed what turned out to be a 25-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. That's not in the books, but anyway, those guys can expect fines. What about all these players who've been tweeting about what a joke that last call was?
Yeah, I think it's really it's out of the bag. And Roger Goodell is a guy who likes to put a tamp down on these things and not have chaos. But it's too far gone. But again, he's not going to be able to change the minds or opinions of every player. He's not going to be. I mean, remarkably, you have Minnesota Vikings players saying what a terrible decision that cost the Green Bay Packers the game. That's how you know it's bad. But yeah, so Goodell can't fight. Goodell can't convince anyone. He can't fight this in the public's mind. He can't change anyone's opinion, but he can have a negotiating strategy. And I just heard maybe one convincing argument, or at least it's worth considering. Well, how could he just be so obstinate? Doesn't he care about PR? Doesn't the league know that it's hurting its product? They're an entertainment property. It's much less entertaining. And so the one argument I heard that had some logic to it is the more obstinate he is, he and the owners are, the less he shows the willingness to compromise, the more he gives the message that we are stern, tough negotiators. And it is a message he wants to give because he doesn't care so much about the $3 to $5 million at stake with these referees. He really cares about the negotiation with the players that's coming up. And so maybe, based on this almost bizarro world logic, the more intense the heat is, thermonuclear, you call it, the tougher Goodell looks by standing up to the heat.
And once it's settled, and it will be settled, once it's settled, how long do you think it will be before the regular refs are compared unfavorably to the replacements?
Oh, it won't happen. There'll be a honeymoon period. And I think what we're seeing is that there are mistakes in every game, but now it seems like the narrative is that these replacement refs can't get anything right. And they do get some things right.
Sure.
Also, there are so many calls that really could go either way. Now the replacement refs are not getting the benefit of any of these calls. On the Sunday night football game, to Chris Collinsworth, who's the announcer for NBC, to his credit, he explicitly said, "Guys, you got to settle." You know, so he was kind of maybe talking out of school, talking about the business partner of NBC and advising them on their business. Mm-hmm. But he was also saying, he was also decrying a lot of penalties that, to my mind, were actually properly called. He spent 5 or 10 minutes talking about how one penalty should have been perhaps illegal contact instead of interference. It doesn't matter. It was still a 5-yard penalty, and it was still a properly called penalty. So watching these games, you get the impression that these replacement refs don't even know if we're using a football or a soccer ball out there. They're maybe a little bit better than that.
Mike Pesca, NPR sports correspondent, comes with us from our bureau in New York. So this game will stick in the Green Bay Packers craw for quite some time, but there have been other notorious incidents where referees or umpires have cost their team a game. Sometimes in the World Series, sometimes at the Olympic Games. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Andy's on the line with us from Chico, California.
Hi. Wasn't it a few years ago that we had a regular NFL official who couldn't tell the difference between heads and tails?
That's right. I think, Mike Pesca, isn't that the game where they couldn't tell, they awarded one team possession of the ball in overtime. They went on to score and win, and that's why the NFL changed its overtime rules.
Yep, it was a Pittsburgh versus Detroit game. Jerome Bettis called, I think he called heads, and listened to as tails, and Bettis looked confused by that. Maybe I got it wrong. But anyway, there was definitely confusion, and they gave it to the wrong team. And this was also prior to the new rules for overtime where every team gets to touch the ball a little bit. Yeah. You see, but compare that, right, which I guess someone could hear something wrong. It's happened all the time. To last week's games, just a spate of so many problems that we can't even talk about every problem in every game. The Detroit-Tennessee game where 12 extra yards were awarded on the overtime winning drive, that 25-yard penalty you referred to in the Redskins game. San Francisco was just given 2 free looks at a challenge, a referee challenge against the rules. You're not allowed to challenge when you have no timeouts. The refs didn't know that. So it seemed like, yeah, heads or tails. I'd trade it all for heads versus tails at this point.
Andy, thanks very much for the call. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Reese on the line calling from Laramie, Wyoming.
Hey, thanks for the show again, Neil. This is fantastic so far.
Thanks.
I just wanted to say my game happens to be the game of the tuck rule, where Tom Brady fumbled and they said he did not.
And that was, of course, Mike Pesca in the playoffs.
And that was
huge.
Yeah, and that was a proper interpretation of the rule. And they looked at, people were confused that that was the rule, but they got it right. And they looked back in the offseason. I even did a story for NPR about how this was about the time that our elections, there were all these problems with elections in Florida. And I did a story saying, wow, you can't even reform elections, but you could reform the NFL like that. So some of the most controversial decisions in the NFL a couple years ago, there was a play where Calvin Johnson caught a touchdown, got up and kind of spiked the ball, and it was ruled he didn't have it long enough. It was actually a correct interpretation of the rule. So it does strike me as ironic that sometimes the referees are most criticized for getting calls right.
Even Mike Pereira, the former NFL vice president for officiating, doesn't agree with the tuck rule.
Right.
I
have to say,
I don't know.
I saw that play and tuned away thinking the game was over. Silly me. Reese, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Let's go next to, this is Matthew. Matthew with us in Portage, Michigan.
Yes, I'd just like to comment on the absolutely horrible officiating we saw in the Sunday night game, Baltimore versus the Patriots. I mean, you've got the Baltimore scoring drives being extended multiple times, and then at the end, the field goal, which may or may not have gone actually through the uprights.
Might have been karma for the tuck rule game.
Yes, that is probably, that might be true.
Did you happen to catch that, Mike?
Yeah. First of all, they need to make the uprights a little longer. I've consulted with physicists. It's possible. It seems like 5 times a year there's a debate if balls go over the uprights. But the replay showed, and they did a good job explaining, if a ball goes over any part of the uprights, it's considered a field goal, which is why Bill Belichick was wrong to have grabbed the official. Beside the fact that he grabbed the official, he was just wrong on the point of facts. That's the sort of game where you say it was really bad. The officiating was really bad. But perhaps a lot of those calls could be argued either way. And we were saying that in the absence of one huge game that's clearly decided by a referee's decision, maybe there won't be the impetus to settle it. As we were having that discussion, there was one game left on the Week 3 schedule. It was this game between the Packers and Seahawks we're talking about, and that is exactly the perfect storm of utter incompetence on the most important play of the game in the most well-watched game of the week. Couldn't have been worse for the NFL.
And at this same moment, wouldn't the officials' union have every reason to say, we're not budging, our position just got a whole lot stronger?
Yeah, maybe they just asked for double the pension money. No, they didn't. But yes, it would seem, you know, they haven't upped their demand, so it's up to the league to meet them, I guess.
Let's go to Carlton. Carlton with us from Rochester, New York.
Hi, I was just going to give the a hockey example of the 99 Stanley Cup playoffs, Game 7, when the Sabres were eliminated when Brett Hull's foot was in the crease for Dallas.
And yes, that was a bad call.
Yes, it was.
In the Stanley Cup playoffs, Mike.
Yeah, you can't have a skate in the crease for a goal. But this is one of those rules, and you go online, Google that, you'll see great photographic images. I just happen to think for the first, 50 years of sports, there were probably worse calls. We just didn't have the technology to notice them. Now, with high-def replays and cameras being situated right above the goal, we know that there are all these calls that are wrong. Then there's the other category where boxing decisions.
Well.
Roy Jones Jr. in such a bad decision in the Olympics that they had to reform the whole game. And if you want to talk, I was just thinking about this, the worst call ever. What's the game, what's the world's game, and what's the biggest stage? It's the World Cup, and it's Diego Maradona's hand of God punching the ball into the goal.
And that cost England a chance to advance in the World Cup.
Yep.
Mike Pesca, thanks very much.
You are welcome.
NPR's Mike Pesca, our sports correspondent, one of them, joining us from our bureau in New York. Tomorrow, it's Political Junkie Day. We'll hope you join us for that. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News in Washington.